There is, unfortunately, an increasing chance of a war happening between Denmark and the United States. A sentence that you would have said was insane and completely unrealistic just a couple of years ago. The recent escalation in tensions began just hours after the U.S. military raided Venezuela and seized that country's president. When Katie Miller, the wife of Stephen Miller, the architect of President Trump's immigration and domestic policies, tweeted out an image of Greenland covered in the American flag with a caption ominously reading "Soon" in all capitals. At nearly the same time, Trump himself, while aboard Air Force One, insisted that America needed Greenland from the standpoint of national security. Trump has repeatedly said over the past few weeks that anything less than full American control over Greenland is completely unacceptable to him, and that deploying military force to seize the island isn't off the table. On the 14th of January, the Danish foreign minister and his Greenlandic counterpart met with Secretary of State Marco Rubio and Vice President J.D. Vance in Washington to discuss the status of Greenland, which ended with the Danish foreign minister leaving, exasperated and convinced that Trump fully intends to conquer Greenland by any means necessary. Shortly afterwards, 8 European countries sent a small token force of military personnel to Greenland to conduct joint exercises with the Danes on the island and to send a message of solidarity against the United States, which Trump responded to with fury. A couple of days later, on the 17th of January, he announced that he would be implementing new tariffs of 10% on all goods exported to the U.S. by the European countries who sent their troops to Greenland, plus Denmark, and that the rate would increase further to 25% on each of them by the 1st of June, unless they relented and agreed to support America's desire to purchase Greenland, in which case the new tariffs would be dropped. Denmark and Greenland's position throughout this whole dispute has repeatedly been that Greenland is not for sale, no matter what the price on offer is, while the Trump administration has repeatedly threatened that they will do whatever it takes to acquire Greenland, including using military force through an invasion if they continue refusing. Trump has since seemingly walked back some of these threats, though. While speaking at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Trump for the first time said that he was dropping his military threat to seize Greenland through force. Nonetheless, he said that he was still committed to acquiring Greenland through a purchase and complained that it had been a historical mistake for the United States to have returned Greenland back to Denmark after the Second World War, when the U.S. occupied the island for a few years during the Nazi occupation of Denmark. Most recently, Trump has claimed that he has reached a compromise deal with NATO in which smaller pockets of territory in Greenland around U.S. military base sites will effectively be ceded and transferred over to American sovereignty, an agreement that is supposedly being modeled on the Sovereign Base Agreement in Cyprus, where the UK carved out 2 territories around their own military bases on the island in 1960 that are recognized sovereign British territories beyond the authority of the government in Cyprus. Denmark, however, has stated that they have rejected this agreement and that their position remains that no territory in Greenland will be ceded under any circumstances. Trump, ever unpredictable, may always return back to Greenland with his pressure tactics and threats again in the future. So what was previously an unthinkable question now actually has to be asked. What would actually happen if the United States really did launch an invasion and occupied Greenland? Allow me to do my best to explain and speculate to the best of my abilities. First of all, if the US actually did launch an invasion of Greenland, the operation to occupy and control it would be fairly simple and straightforward. Denmark, who controls Greenland as a self-governing autonomous territory, has very few actual defenses on the island. There are usually only about 150 Danish military and civilian personnel who work across 6 small military facilities on the island. Although Denmark has recently announced that they will be deploying 1,000 combat-ready troops to the island in light of America's threats. Nonetheless, Denmark has placed no fighter aircraft, missile defenses, or heavy ground forces on Greenland of any kind that can offer up any sort of meaningful resistance to a committed American invasion force. Denmark's tiny military presence on the island usually consists only of small patrol units and limited surveillance assets, which ironically is because Denmark has historically relied on the much more powerful United States to defend Greenland instead. Greenland is a geographically massive territory, roughly the same size as the entire eastern time zone of the United States, but it's also incredibly sparsely populated, home to fewer than 57,000 people, most of whom are Greenlandic Inuits by ethnicity. Because of that, there are very few population centers across the island to be concerned with taking over during an invasion scenario. Greenland's capital and largest city, Nuuk, is home to only around 20,000 people, which is already more than a third of the entire island's population, all concentrated right there. while everywhere else are basically small settlements. An American invasion of Greenland wouldn't look anything at all like other modern invasions in Ukraine or Iraq, or even like the US military raid that captured Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. There would not be any contested beach landings or large-scale kinetic combat operations. Instead, American invasion forces would be focused on securing control over Greenland's principal infrastructure and access points as rapidly as possible. U.S. military transport planes would land at the already existing U.S. military base in Greenland at Pituffik, while others would land at Greenland's handful of major settlements. Fighter aircraft would secure Greenland's airspace, while the Navy would secure the possible maritime approaches. The troops on the ground would deploy to quickly capture and secure the island's ports, airfields, and communication systems to deny access to Greenland from reinforcements coming from Europe, in an operation that would kind of resemble Russia's capture of Crimea in 2014. And doing so wouldn't require a large invasion force like what was recently deployed to Venezuela. Most military theorists argue that in order to successfully occupy and hold a territory, and combat the insurgency from the local population in the territory, you need a ratio of about 20 to 25 occupying soldiers per 1,000 residents to conduct counterinsurgency operations. That implies that in order to occupy and hold Greenland and suppress an insurgency from the local population, the American invasion force would realistically only need to consist of between 1,140 and 1,425 soldiers, which is only a fraction of the armed force that the U.S. assembled off the coast of Venezuela before the operation was launched that seized Maduro. Realistically, when considering that Denmark might have up to 1,000 soldiers present in Greenland for defense, the U.S. would probably not need to commit any more than 10,000 of their own soldiers to the initial invasion and occupation of Greenland. With no air defenses, no fighter aircraft, and no heavy ground forces to worry about in Greenland, a lightning and determined U.S. operation to seize control over the island would likely be successful. And it would probably also involve minimal bloodshed, even with Denmark's recent but still modest and under-equipped deployments. Indeed, the local Greenlandic opposition would no doubt vehemently resist the whole operation. According to a poll in 2025 that was conducted by a Danish paper, nearly 85% of Greenland's population reject the idea of joining the United States. There would be virtually universal protest and resistance, and probably even initial insurgent activities against the invasion. But they are so few in number and so lightly armed that any substantial resistance couldn't possibly last for very long. Take the example of Argentina's invasion and occupation of the Falkland Islands in 1982, in what I believe would be the most similar modern historical comparison to this. Back then, Argentina invaded and occupied the British-controlled Falkland Islands with an initial force of about 2,000 soldiers and marines, who were able to rapidly overpower the tiny British population on the islands, who only numbered around 2,000 themselves. Only 68 Royal Marines were present on the islands to resist the initial 2,000-strong Argentine invasion force, and so their capability to resist them was very limited. They initially fought back and killed one of the invading Argentine soldiers. But other than that, they were ordered to avoid heavy casualties and quickly surrendered within hours. A similar course of events would almost certainly take place during a hypothetical U.S. invasion of Greenland today. The initial military takeover of the island would be fairly easy and well within the capabilities of the United States. But what would come afterwards would be absolutely catastrophic from an economic, geopolitical, and political perspective. During an interview with CNN in early January, Stephen Miller exclaimed that nobody would fight the United States militarily over the future of Greenland. Indeed, this was the exact same belief that drove Argentina to invade and occupy the Falkland Islands in 1982. The assumption that the Falkland Islands weren't actually important enough to the British to really start a war over. In their case, Argentina grossly miscalculated Britain's willingness to defend their own territory no matter how far away from the mainland and sparsely populated, which triggered a ferocious British counteroffensive that drove them out of the islands, killed hundreds of soldiers, and even resulted in the collapse of their government. In that case, however, Britain's military capabilities far exceeded those of Argentina, which, of course, influenced their decision to counterattack. During a U.S. invasion of Greenland scenario, though, the opposite situation would be in place, because America's military capabilities utterly dwarf those of Denmark, and indeed, even the whole of Europe combined. The budget of the U.S. military is nearly 100 times larger than the Danish military's budget is, while the U.S. military spending alone makes up around 2/3 of all of NATO's collective military spending put together, meaning that the U.S. spends roughly twice as much on its military as every single other country in NATO does combined. Unlike during the Argentine invasion of the Falklands scenario, when Britain realistically could consider a military response to retake the islands, Denmark and even the rest of Europe would simply not have the same option to work with. Denmark could, and almost certainly would, immediately take every possible political avenue available to protest against America's invasion and occupation. Politically, while Greenland is a part of the Kingdom of Denmark, it is not itself a member of the EU or considered EU territory. Because of that legal distinction, it's ambiguous and unclear if the EU's mutual defense clause would actually be able to be triggered over a Greenland invasion. But since Greenland is actually a part of NATO, NATO's mutual defense clause would be much more legally concrete than the EU's would be. So right away, Denmark would argue that America's invasion of its sovereign territory in Greenland directly violated Article 5 of NATO's founding treaty, which asserts that an armed attack against the territory of one NATO member shall be considered an armed attack against all of the other members as well. The problem with this direction is that NATO, as an organization, was never founded with the belief that one of the alliance's members would blatantly attack another one. And so, there's no internal mechanism within NATO that's built to handle a situation like this. It's important to state that NATO has experienced significant internal military tensions between its members in the past. Between the 1950s and 70s, the UK and Iceland engaged in the so-called Cod Wars over fishing rights in the North Atlantic, that culminated with Icelandic ships actually opening fire on British ships in 1975, and Iceland's threat that it would even withdraw from NATO entirely before the crisis was defused diplomatically. In the 1990s and 2000s, during NATO's expansion east, there were significant concerns at the time about the renewal of border disputes concerning Hungary and the large Hungarian-majority territories in neighboring Romania and Slovakia. And most critically of all, there has been the long-running military confrontation between Greece and Turkey, who until recently were considered the most likely two NATO countries to go to war with each other. Turkey and Greece both joined NATO in the 1950s, but in 1974, Turkey invaded Cyprus and entered into direct conflict with Greek troops who were present there, after which Greece withdrew from NATO's Integrated Military Command for the next 6 years in protest. Both sides maintained extensive and bitter maritime disputes against each other in the Aegean Sea. In 1996, a Greek fighter aircraft even shot down a Turkish fighter over the Aegean Sea and killed its Turkish pilot. And as recently as 2020, a Turkish warship locked its fire control radar system onto a French frigate in the Eastern Mediterranean during boiling tensions over the civil war in Libya. Ultimately, none of these incidents between NATO members caused any long-lasting impacts. But a full-on invasion by the United States into the sovereign territory of another NATO member would make all of these previous incidents seem like child's play by comparison. Denmark would argue to the North Atlantic Council, NATO's decision-making body, that the United States had directly violated Article 5 of the NATO Treaty. The problem is that in order for the North Atlantic Council to actually activate Article 5, it requires the universal consensus of all 32 of the NATO allied members. If any one of the NATO allies refuses to give its approval to the Council for an Article 5 violation, then there won't be a consensus, and Article 5 won't be formally triggered. This essentially gives any NATO member a de facto veto power over the triggering of Article 5 by the Council by simply refusing to give its approval. And in this scenario, the United States would almost certainly do this and block the Article 5 clause from being formally activated in response to its own invasion, even if every single other NATO member approved of it. NATO, in effect, would become paralyzed and trapped by the invasion and would not be capable of formally responding to it as a collective organization. This is why many analysts and politicians say that a U.S. invasion of Greenland would immediately spell the death of NATO as an organization, including Denmark's own Prime Minister, Mette Frederiksen. The United States is the fundamental core of NATO as an organization. Not only does the U.S. alone make up two-thirds of NATO's collective military spending, but for more than three-quarters of a century now, the Supreme Allied Commander Europe, the second highest-ranking position within the alliance, has always been held by an American general, including today. This commander is responsible for drafting up NATO's defense plans for Europe, including Greenland, and they've consequently always assumed a high degree of U.S. military involvement, while U.S. military officers are deeply interconnected throughout every major NATO command. Responding through NATO, an organization that's dominated by the U.S., against armed U.S. aggression will simply not be possible. And that could well spell the rapid collapse of NATO as an organization, as trust in the US among NATO's other allies will immediately evaporate and collapse. To say nothing of the absolute collapse of faith in the United States and Denmark, who has historically been among America's greatest, most loyal, and most effective allies, with an incredible geographic vantage point along the Danish Straits, enabling them to bottle up the Russian Baltic Sea Fleet within the Baltic. Losing that ally alone would be an absolutely catastrophic consequence. The nations of Europe would, at this point, likely face the greatest moment in their history since the Second World War, with an impossibly difficult decision to make. Would they rebuke the US invasion and occupation of Greenland, or would they try to accept it and continue on with business as usual as much as possible? On the one hand, many European countries would likely feel that Greenland is simply not important enough to risk completely shattering ties with the US over. The UK, Norway, Denmark, the Netherlands, and Italy all currently operate the F-35 fighter as a part of their militaries, while Finland, Belgium, Germany, Poland, Czechia, Romania, and Greece have all ordered F-35s and are awaiting their deliveries. An immediate shattering in relations with the US over the Greenland issue risks the U.S. withholding access to the communications, targeting data, and munitions that are necessary to adequately operate the F-35, which in a flash would immediately undermine and weaken all of their air forces and capabilities and crash tens of billions of dollars worth of already paid-for orders. Worse, European militaries would have no palatable options to replace their effectively bricked F-35s with. The only other countries that manufacture true fifth-generation fighters as advanced as the F-35 are Russia and China, neither of which are particularly attractive suppliers to Europe either. European-made alternatives like the French-made Rafale or the Swedish-made Gripen are 4.5-generation fighters and not as advanced or capable as the F-35 is. Completely replacing the F-35 with domestically produced Rafale or Gripen fighters would take at least a decade, cost tens of billions of euros worth of unexpected costs, and still leave European air forces disadvantaged when compared to the American and Russian air forces, who both possess true fifth-generation fighter capabilities. All of this alone would make strongly confronting the US over a Greenland invasion a bitter pill for many of the European countries to swallow. But there's a lot more to be concerned about as well. The British military in particular is substantially more dependent on the US military than most others are in Europe. The UK signals intelligence, for example, is deeply integrated with the US. But the most sensitive area is the UK's nuclear deterrent. For one, the UK doesn't even have an independent ballistic missile program. The UK utilizes Trident missiles for its nuclear deterrent aboard its nuclear-armed submarines, but it doesn't actually own any of its Trident missiles outright. Rather, the UK leases their Trident missiles from a shared US-UK pool from the US Navy's base in Kings Bay, Georgia instead. In a flash, if the UK strongly confronted the US over a Greenland invasion scenario, the US could effectively retaliate by ending its lease agreement on the Trident missiles and cripple Britain's submarine nuclear deterrent force in the process. Re-establishing an independent UK submarine nuclear deterrent without the Americans would likely take decades and tens of billions of pounds worth of money, which is both politically and financially not very feasible. Britain also has to worry about its future nuclear-powered submarine force as well. Under the terms of the AUKUS agreement with the US and Australia, the UK is currently set to build 12 new top-of-the-line nuclear-powered attack submarines with shared technology designs from the US, which means that the US could also retaliate by pulling their support from the pact and leaving the UK's current nuclear submarine plans in ruin as well. On top of these concerns, there's also the fear of what Russia might end up doing in the event of a paralyzed or a collapsing NATO. If the US invasion of Greenland indeed ends up triggering a collapse of NATO, Russia could attempt to hasten the process further or take advantage of the chaos by probing NATO and the EU's defenses in the east, most alarmingly of all in the Baltic states. Who's to say that shortly after American boots hit the ground in Greenland and cause a crisis within NATO in the west, Russian troops don't march just across the border of Estonia and seize control over the city of Narva and spark another simultaneous crisis in the east? Narva is a majority Russian city in Estonia that's immediately across the border from Russia, which Russia would no doubt claim rightfully belongs to Russia, just as it's done with Russian-majority areas in Ukraine in the past. If NATO collapses or becomes paralyzed over the Greenland invasion, then who would end up coming to Estonia's defense over Narva? Estonia, probably unlike Denmark with the Greenland invasion, could actually trigger the EU's mutual defense clause over an invasion and occupation of Narva. But it would leave out the US, the UK, Canada, and Turkey, some of NATO's most powerful members. Faced with a crisis in Greenland and another crisis in Narva, Russia could gamble on the EU not actually forcefully responding to the occupation of a city that has a Russian ethnic majority anyway. And then the EU would be placed into a crisis of confidence as well. Europe would also have to be deeply concerned about the future of Ukraine as well. A collapse of NATO scenario from the Greenland invasion would destroy Ukraine's hopes of joining an alliance that no longer exists. Ukraine and many other European countries will worry that antagonizing the US too much over Greenland would risk jeopardizing Washington's tentative offer to join them in offering Ukraine security guarantees after the war with Russia is over. The implied threat to Europe that the Trump administration would make with the Greenland invasion would be effectively for them to choose between Ukraine and Greenland. Another impossibly difficult choice. For all of these security-related reasons, many states in Europe might ultimately calculate that the fate of Greenland simply wouldn't be worth the cost of significant pushback. Some, like France, who had the foresight to build a much more independent military than the UK and other European countries, might push back more aggressively, but they would still have few options to truly retaliate militarily. Many of the European nations would find themselves stuck in a position between the reality of their military dependence on the United States and their public's fury at the blatant US violation of Denmark's and Greenland's sovereignty. A recent poll in Germany found that 62% of Germans favored support for coming to Denmark's aid during a conflict with the United States, whether it would actually be possible for the German military to even do so or not. It is possible that NATO wouldn't actually collapse outright over the invasion. But what is certain is that the underlying trust in the United States and NATO among every European ally country would be permanently and irrevocably lost for an entire generation, if not even longer. The UK, the Netherlands, and France, especially, would all be deeply distrustful of the US's intentions for decades going forward. With their own sovereign territories in the Western Hemisphere to worry about America deciding to unilaterally seize next. How, after seizing Greenland, could the US possibly assure these three countries that they wouldn't seize Guadeloupe or Martinique, Aruba or St. Martin, or Bermuda or the British Virgin Islands next, using similar pretexts and arguments they did for Greenland? Any chance of the US really cooperating with European nations on just about anything would be dead in the water for decades. A disaster during an era of increasing great power competition with China and Russia. China, while probably publicly protesting, would also be ecstatic that the invasion and occupation would free them from any pushback on invading and occupying Taiwan next. Russia would be similarly ecstatic at the conflict erupting within NATO. The possibility of NATO just completely collapsing, what it would mean for their ongoing war aims in Ukraine, and what it could mean for pushing the door open to further assaults on the Baltic states, like the Narva option. While Europe would probably ultimately not retaliate against the US invasion directly through military means, there were many indirect and economic methods that they would probably take to retaliate instead, if that's the path they ultimately choose to go down. The European NATO states could, for example, force the closures of several critically important US military bases that are present on their continent, like Rota in Spain, Aviano and Sigonella in Italy, Blackenheath in the UK, and, most importantly of all, Ramstein in Germany. A sprawling airbase that hosts tens of thousands of American soldiers that has long been critical for sustaining US military operations in the Middle East and Africa. Shutting down all or even some of these bases across the continent in response to the US seizure of Greenland would severely undermine America's ability to project power into the Middle East and Africa. As recently as the 7th of January of this year, the US military seizure of a Russian-linked oil tanker in the North Atlantic near Iceland relied heavily on their access to UK airfields and, ironically, unspecified support from Denmark. Now, some of these states might also be wary of actually forcing the US military out of their countries for good, out of fear of removing the US security umbrella that has defended them against outside threats for generations now at this point. But, obviously at the same time, a direct US attack on one of their own NATO allies in Greenland could end up crashing any idea of the US security umbrella even existing for anyone at all. Possibly worst of all, the British can also choose to suspend their cooperation with the US military on Diego Garcia. one of America's most critical air bases for projecting power into the Indo-Pacific region that is now on the territory of Mauritius that is leased to the UK, who then allows the US military to operate on the island. Threatening the closure of the Diego Garcia base to the Americans is probably the most critical point of military leverage that the British could apply on the Americans in response to a Greenland invasion. Another way that the Europeans could respond would be through economic retaliation. Blanket tariffs against all American imports would be difficult for most to stomach, because all of the major European economies are much more reliant on trade with the US than the US is on them. 17% of UK exports go towards the US, while only 4% of US exports go in the opposite direction. While similarly, 10% of German exports go towards the US, while only 4% of US exports go to Germany. Not to mention that after Europe worked to cut out Russia from their oil and gas supply after the Ukraine invasion, they significantly increased their oil and gas imports from America instead to compensate. Now, if they cut out the US from their oil and gas supply, just like they did with the Russians before them, who else will they have to turn to next? Rather than issuing blanket tariffs on all incoming American goods that could risk retaliatory American tariffs taking their own more significant exports to the US market, Europe would likely attempt to surgically target America's tech industry as much as possible instead, which is probably America's biggest pain point and the least harmful option that the Europeans could take to themselves. Europe could roll out fines or even bans against big American tech firms like Meta, Google, X, Tesla, and Apple, blocking them from being able to operate in Europe so long as Greenland remains occupied and no doubt crashing their stock prices in the process, which would also send the tech-heavy US stock market plummeting. Even more threatening, the EU could opt for the technological nuclear option and restrict America's access to the ASML company's ultra-advanced photolithography machines, the only ultra-complex machines in the world that are capable of manufacturing the world's most advanced microchips. Cutting out or restricting the US from ASML's machines would make it impossible for the US to build the most advanced chips that it needs for just about everything, which of course would be catastrophic. However, the US would likely retaliate to this nuclear option with an equivalent nuclear retaliation, and restrict Europe's access to the chip designs from leading American companies like NVIDIA and AMD. ASML itself also relies on acquiring a lot of parts for their machines from multiple US companies, like Cymer, who provides ASML with their most advanced light sources. This US retaliation would effectively prevent ASML from being able to build any of their machines in the first place, which would basically end up resulting in the crashing of the economies and technologies on both sides of the Atlantic. So it's unclear if any of that would actually end up happening or not. When it comes to chip manufacturing, the US and Europe are probably just too deeply intertwined with each other to ever truly decouple, at least not for decades and at a cost of untold amounts of treasure. Some in the EU have also threatened another financial nuclear weapon as a response to a US invasion, a coordinated, mass selling off of the trillions of dollars worth of US treasuries that the European countries collectively hold. Doing so would, at least in the short term, significantly damage the US economy by skyrocketing interest rates, which would spill over into jacking up mortgage rates, spiking borrowing costs, and increasing the interest payments that the US government has to make on servicing its national debt. Over time, however, other buyers would ultimately absorb the bonds. It might end up taking a while, but they would probably become absorbed eventually by other wealthy countries who don't really care about Greenland, like Saudi Arabia and Qatar. And over the long term, the US would most likely end up stabilizing itself. The EU probably wouldn't take this option because it would be the definition of cutting off one's nose in order to spite their face, because it would probably be a lot worse for Europe than it would be for the United States. By mass selling off all of their US treasuries at once, about $8 trillion worth of them across Europe and the UK, they would be driving down the price of trillions of dollars worth of assets that they themselves own and would be selling into a rapidly collapsing market, significantly damaging all of their own national reserves in the process. In the end, it's an option that would probably cost the European countries lighting around $2 trillion worth of their own national reserves on fire to spite the US over Greenland. And so, would they really feel like burning that much of their own money into the ether just for the sake of Greenland? Probably not, and that's why this option isn't a very realistic one. Just like some of the other major economic threats like restricting ASML. These options are financially mutually assured destruction, and will devastate the European economies probably even more severely than the American economy. Realistically, the worst economic retaliation that the Europeans would probably end up taking would be targeting the American big tech firms, because that's the option that has significantly lower risks for major blowback. Canada, meanwhile, would face a cataclysmic strategic disaster by the U.S. takeover of Greenland. With Greenland occupied and controlled, the U.S. would manage to completely encircle Canada on all possible sides from the south, east, and west, with the north blocking Canada in by the frozen Arctic. An American-controlled Greenland would effectively block Canada's connection to the remaining allies in Europe and lock in their strategic isolation surrounded by the U.S. An incredibly alarming position to be in with an American president who routinely threatens to annex Canada. After the precedent set by a U.S. invasion and seizure of Greenland and the new strategic reality of becoming surrounded by an openly hostile America, Canada would have no remaining choice but to take its defense and sovereignty incredibly and deathly seriously. What has been a peaceful and stable border for more than two centuries would overnight transform into an increasingly militarized border resembling the EU's frontiers with Russia. And most disastrously of all, Canada would be left with no other choice than to rush towards building a nuclear bomb as a final guarantee of their deterrence and sovereignty. North America would overnight become transformed into a deeply unstable and uncertain place, while relations between America and Canada would be wrecked for at least a generation or longer, just like they would be with Europe. And all of these dire, earth-shattering consequences, collapsing America's most strategic alliances with NATO states in Europe and Canada, and ruining any chance of these allies cooperating in the Arctic and other regions, over an island that is of very questionable value to the U.S. owning and controlling instead of Denmark. Under current treaties between the U.S. and Denmark, the U.S. is already legally allowed to position however many troops they want on Greenland and perform just about any military operations they want to there. Trump has repeatedly lambasted Denmark for neglecting Greenland security and risking it being overrun by the Russians or the Chinese. But his criticisms ignores that the U.S. themselves have done the exact same thing in Greenland. Once upon a time back during the Cold War, the U.S. had a massive 10,000 of their troops deployed to Patufik Space Base in the north of the island, which back then was known as Thule Air Base. But after the Cold War ended, the U.S. steadily winded down their operations at the base and across Greenland to the point where today, only a few hundred U.S. troops still remain deployed there. Some of the Trump administration have hailed Greenland's potential as a treasure trove of rare earth materials waiting to be seized. This ignores, however, that Denmark already allows American mining companies to operate in Greenland if they wish, and they've repeatedly denied the entry of Chinese companies to the island under direct U.S. pressure. Moreover, not a single American mining company has yet expressed any actual interest in mining in Greenland at all, because the cost of mining the materials on an island with almost zero infrastructure that are also buried beneath miles of ice sheet that covers 80% of the island are considered to be astronomical. The rare earths indeed exist on Greenland, but being able to actually recover them in a way that's considered economical is very uncertain, at least not for another century or two until the ice sheet melts a bit further. Trump's purported concerns about Russian and Chinese submarines operating freely in the Arctic is somewhat based in truth. Just in December of 2025, a Chinese submarine operating in the Arctic successfully journeyed beneath the ocean's ice sheet for the first time, a major new threat for Washington to be concerned about during a potential conflict with China. But notably, the biggest threat to America in the Arctic isn't seemingly coming from the direction of Greenland at all, but from the direction of Alaska instead. Between 2020 and 2025, NORAD has counted a total of 95 different Russian and Chinese incursions into the American and Canadian air defense identification zones. Out of those, not a single one of them took place from the direction of Greenland. Directly from the north beyond Canada, there were only 4 reported incursions, while the overwhelming majority, 91 out of 95 of them, took place from the west around Alaska. Russia and China are actively probing the defenses of North America around Alaska, and have never once in the past 5 years probed them around Greenland. And when you actually look at the geography of this part of the world, it starts to make sense why. The Bering Strait, the only entrance into the Arctic from the Pacific side, is much closer to China than Greenland is. If China was going to deploy submarines armed with conventional or nuclear missiles into the Arctic to threaten America with, the most likely and quickest path that they would take would be through the Bering Strait, while America's defenses around this strait are also extremely low. The nearest deepwater harbor to the Bering Strait that the Americans currently control is located at Dutch Harbor, more than 700 nautical miles away from it. During an incident in 2022, when a Chinese-Russian patrol entered into the U.S. EEZ nearby, all the U.S. could muster as a response was just a single small Coast Guard cutter to monitor them. The primary U.S. and Canadian air bases in the Arctic region are deep within their interiors and far away from the coasts. In order to intercept and monitor incoming Russian and Chinese aircraft around Alaska, U.S. and Canadian fighters usually have to fly for more than 1,500 nautical miles and have to be refueled repeatedly while flying in the air. Like during another incident as recently as 2024, when a joint Chinese-Russian strategic bomber patrol came within just 140 nautical miles of Alaskan territory. So, rather than focusing on Greenland to enhance national security, the U.S. should, in reality, be focusing on what they already control in Alaska instead, where the threats appear to be far more acute and the local geography far more strategic. Once upon a time during the Cold War, the U.S. operated and maintained a massive military base on this speck of an island in the Aleutian Island chain called Adak. Back then, more than 6,000 U.S. troops were deployed to the base on Adak, which was used as a strategically located listening post for tracking Soviet submarines. But after the Cold War ended, the base was steadily shut down throughout the 1990s, and it has been largely left behind to the elements. What was once a sprawling base home to 6,000 soldiers and their families has shrunk down to only a couple of dozen people still remaining on the island today in the 2020s. But Adak could and should become a renewed vital interest to the U.S. again today in the new modern world. Adak sits at the strategic gateway to the Arctic, guarding the approach to the Bering Strait and flanking both Russia and China. Even in its current state of disrepair after decades of neglect, the old base at Adak still includes a deepwater harbor, fuel storage sites, and two runways, while also being positioned about 1,000 nautical miles closer to Taiwan than America's other major bases are in continental Alaska. Rebuilding and restaffing the old base on Adak to its full potential would address America's security concerns in the Arctic in ways that nothing on Greenland ever could, because Adak's geography is more strategic to the U.S. in the event of a conflict with China or Russia than even Greenland is. Greenland, of course, is important as well, but again, America can already position as many troops as it wants on Greenland and do whatever it wants on the island under currently existing treaties. Greenland is important to the United States from a security perspective, but there's no practical difference between Denmark owning Greenland versus America owning Greenland on that specific point, while Greenland is also largely useless from an economic perspective for at least another century or two. Recent polls have shown that only 7% of Americans actually support using military force to seize Greenland from Denmark. And the island is simply not worth all of the enormous cost that would be incurred by taking it. By doing so, America would be choosing a frozen, sparsely populated island over its own continental alliance system in Europe and Canada that has formed the backbone of international stability in the North Atlantic region for generations now. And that is why actually invading Greenland would almost certainly become one of the greatest foreign policy blunders in all of American history, at least since the Vietnam War, and possibly even further back. Now, there's a lot of data that goes into producing these kinds of videos. Whether it's visually showing you the scale and location of Greenland's population pattern, detailing out where Russian and Chinese aircraft have incurred on American and Canadian airspace, or showing you how large the island of Greenland is when compared to the eastern time zone of the United States, the ability to actually visualize raw data like this on the map instead of just reading about it in text format is exactly what makes learning about these kinds of complicated geopolitical subjects so incredibly fascinating to me. And it's why the Exploring Data Visually course is one of my favorite courses that I've ever taken with this video sponsor, Brilliant. They start out by teaching you some real bare-bones fundamentals through interactive exercise and straightforward explanations. Then as you progress, they bring these smaller concepts back together into the bigger process, and soon enough, you have a decent grasp of what originally seemed like a daunting subject. And the same goes for all of the other subjects that they cover, too. From calculus to AI to computer science, advanced physics, geometry, and much more. I think that Brilliant is perfect for the kind of person who genuinely loves understanding new things, as they get you up to the level where you can apply the concepts that you learn into your everyday life. And they also make learning super practical. Their courses break down into short segments of about 15 minutes each, so you can easily use their app to make steady progress in learning while you're commuting or just whenever you have some free time. So, if you're the type of person who loves learning new things, or you want to get more serious about learning something new for the new year, you can try out everything that Brilliant has to offer for free for a full 30 days by clicking the button here on your screen right now, or by visiting brilliant.org/reallifelore, or by clicking the link that's down below in the description. And best of all, you'll also get 20% off of an annual premium subscription. It's an incredible way to help support my channel and learn some cool new things at the same time. And as always, thank you so much for watching.